So that's what on Wednesday we're discussing two potential scenarios of Nigo. We have to understand why the Shiddur should not be acceptable in terms of Nigo. So the background to our whole discussion is the question that the Gemara already raised in a little bit about the Shavuot that the Rishon took up upon, is that the entire institution of Shavuot, both in terms of Shavuot HaShomer as well as Shavuot HaMadre Mikzvot, are very problematic, because they both seem to fly in the face of the established principle of Nigo. We have Mishnayos, the Gemara, to talk about the institution of Nigo, even though, honestly, we're not quite sure how Chazal figured this whole thing out, but really there's the principle of Nigo that's governing Dinei Mamonos. Yes, to be shown in every case of Shavuos HaShomerim, you should let the guy off the hook and not insist on him taking a Shavuah, because when he says that the animal was stolen, even though we may not necessarily trust him on that kind of per se, but he has an ego in his pocket. The ego is, he could have said that he never got it in the first place. Or he could have said that he returned the animal already. Those would both be examples of a kofar akol, and a kofar akol would not be required to take any shvuah whatsoever. So let's believe him when he says, the nignav ananas, nigo, that he could have said, for the sense of Hoyas Babiol. That was question number one. Question number two, every lady of the mikdash is also similar, because when I say, well, we're 100, and you respond 50, let's believe you outright on the 50. We shouldn't insist on administering a shvuah to you. Nigo, you could have been called for a call. And if you would have said you owe nothing, we would have let you go off scot-free. So how can the Torah ever institute the parashah of shvuah? Every shvuah is undermining the principle of nigo. So came along the Rimagash, and he said the answer is very simple, that nigo doesn't work with the shvuah. Nigo, we find throughout Shas in Dinei Mamonos, nigo can get you off a case of having to pay money. Nigo does not exempt the person from the shvuah. What was the rationale for that? So we gave offered a suggestion there with the Taz that Nigo is a wonderful way of proving things, but it's not the best way. There is a hierarchy of proof, and shvuah is a hierarchy of proof. So when it's a case of, are we going to make you pay the money, not make you pay the money? So the answer is, well, Nigo proves to us, so to speak, that you don't have to pay the money. But in the case of a shvuah, when we have available to us a higher level of proof, such as a shvuah, we're not going to satisfy ourselves with the lower form of a proof, and therefore, Nigo lifts up Yishvah Lomri. That was Rebbe Gash's approach. And the Rush said it's not true. The Rush says, if it works for Mammon, it works for Shvuah as well. So why doesn't it work in these two cases? So the Rush is rather than almost like a sweeping global statement, like Rebbe Gash, that Nigos and Shvuah just don't mix. No, Nigo works. Nigo in theory works. If it would meet all the criteria of Nigo. One of the basic criteria of Nigo is that it cannot be a Nigo to Ha'aza. Nigo to Ha'aza means that, believe me when I'm saying A, because I could have just as easily said B. But if you couldn't just as easily said B, because saying B would have involved a degree of chutzpah that most people at least used to not want to show, there's a Gemara that says in the Masechta Ketubos that if a married woman walks into Beis Din and she looks the husband in the face and she says, you gave me a get already, and the husband denies it, so the Gemara says, she's not menace. Why is she not menace? Because ain't isha me'iza pereb, it's made by law. So a woman to walk in the basin and to look her husband in the face and say to himself, that you gave me a get, and he knows she's lying, so she must be telling the truth. It's inconceivable that anybody should have such a degree of chutzpah. So the Ramon even has a right that he's not so sure whether we could say that this man is that. In Krakow in the 1500s, you can just imagine the degree of chutzpah that existed in Poland 500 years ago. So we'll leave it at that in terms of extrapolating to 2019. But getting back to that story, So comes the Rush and says that since people, generally speaking, aren't mechutzafim, to believe the person that believe me when I say that it was stolen, Nigo, I could have looked you in the face and lied straight and said, well, that's not such a good Nigo. Because to say that it was stolen, the mafkid has no idea whether it was stolen or not. So that doesn't amount to a chutzpah. To say that something was never got in the first place, and the mafkid, we shouldn't use the phrase, makir b'shikro, the mafkid knows that you're lying to your thief, that's a tremendous chutzpah, and therefore a Nigo de Ha'azah is going to fall short. So according to the Rush, Nigo lifts the Shvuah works, but Nigo de Ha'azah doesn't work. So that was the background to our discussion, but now we have to get back to our real sugya. We had a din that was presented both in our sugya and then elaborated part of the Shvuahs, that when you have a case of a Shvuah HaShomrim, the Shvuah HaShomrim will only be effective if the event didn't take place with an Alva Eda. If there are hundreds of people around who could easily come and testify whether it was stolen or not, then the buck stops here. Then the Shmuel doesn't work. And that's what the term means when it says, Im Tarofi Tarei Yivieu Eid. The truthfully, Shalim Yivieu Eid. You have to bring Eidim. If you can bring Eidim, then you have to bring Eidim. No choice. So comes the halacha and tells us, and what if the person can't produce Eidim? If he, I mean, he should be able to. There's no reason why he shouldn't be able to. And yet he comes in and says, I don't have the Eidim, I have nothing. So what are we going to do? We're not going to make him take a shvuah. We're just simply going to make him pay. So in a case where there are Eidim easily available, the din Torah is not really a shvuah din Torah. The din Torah has been transformed now. It's a moment to take a din Torah. Now it's governed by the rules of Mammon. And governed by the rules of Mammon, so we see Apishna Eidim Yachom Dover, that you have to produce two Eidim, nothing less than two Eidim. So comes the Ketos and says, wait a second. Once we've just changed this into the realm of regular thingamamadas, let's bring the Migo back to life. Let's turn around and say, why are we coming down so hard in the Shomer and saying, unless you can bring Eidim, we're going to make you pay. Now let the Shomer turn around to us and say, now we have a Migo. Is that a good question? Is that a powerful question that Ketos is asking? Let's see if we can go through the Shomer and evaluate that question. According to the Rimagash, that sounds like a great question. Because according to the Rimagash, the factor that's going to let us invoke this Migo or avoid using this Migo is one thing. Is this Mammon or is this Shvuah? The Kol Zman, that the warrant either easily available, so then the Halacha dictates, is the Shvuah type of a Din Torah. So when you're dealing with Hilchos Shvuah, sorry, Hilchos Shvuah, we say Migos don't work. But once we take it out of the realm of Shvuah into the realm of Mammon, so in the realm of Mammon, so then Migos come back to life again. The Frechtik says, according to the Rimagash, this Din Torah, once you're telling me that the event took place in the Times Square at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so there are hundreds of Eidim available, the name of the Din Torah has just changed. We just crossed out. We thought it said Reuben against Shimon and Hilchos Shvuah. We just crossed out the world of Hilchos and we wrote in the word Hilchos Mammon. Once you're in the realm of Mammon, then guess what? Then all the aspects of Migo come back to life, so back to square one. Why in the world are we making the Shomer pay? Because he can't produce Eidim. There are no Eidim who say it was stolen. Let him be believed to say it was stolen. The Migo, it could have said, Lohayez Vamayarlov. He's got a good Migo. So according to Rimagash, the question is very, very powerful. What about according to the Rush? According to the Rush, who said that the deficiency of the Migo has nothing to do with Mammon versus Shvuah. According to the Rush, Migos are equally valid in Hilchos Mammon and Hilchos Shvuah. The deficiency of the Migo was that it just doesn't meet the criteria of Migo, because it's a Migo da Aza, and you can't even get into the batter's box. You can't say with a straight face, believe me, because I could have just as easily said that line is not true. I mean, just as easily. It's a, you're a chutzif if you would have said otherwise. You're a meyiz if you would have said otherwise. So according to the Rush, who says that the reason why the Migo originally failed us, in every case of Shurus HaShomrim, the Migo fails because of the Aza, so the Chayr really tells this question, it's not like a question. Because whether we're passing Hilchos Shvuah, passing Hilchos Mammon, it's the same thing. The real problem, the real deficiency is the other angle. So L'chora, I say L'chora three times over, L'chora, it would appear that according to the Rush, the question is not such a strong question. However, upon further observation, we realize, and the Ketos alluded to all this in about three words, the Ketos knew this and 15,000 times more, so the Ketos makes reference to an Ayin Sham, an Ayin Sham, Chup Ayin Sham. And all of a sudden you come to the realization that this question itself is a powerful question, in the fear of Rimagash, in the fear of Rush. But in order to appreciate the godless, the amkus, the depth of itself's question, we have to familiarize ourselves a little bit more with some of the intricacies of Migo da Aza. So our starting point in the Rush was, if it's a Migo da Aza, it's going to fail us miserably. Not so simple. Let's take a look at the Gemara, the 10th of the Marmikamos. A lot has been written about this sugya. It's a very, very short sugya, two lines practically in the Gemara. But this is an eye-opener for all of the Chachmigos, and it's going to impact greatly on our discussion. So, Hano Izi the Achlu Chushla bin Ahardah. So, there are some goats that ate up somebody else's barley, which is like pure barley or something. So, Reuben's goats went ahead and ate up Shimon's barley. We already know enough of a common to realize. Pay for that. That's called the shame. It was Bishusa rather than Yipato. You just pay for Hano. But it was Bishusa Nili. You have to pay the full value of the Chushla, of the peeled barley. So, Asab Mari Chushla, have Sinu, Tavakatain Tuva. So, what did the owner of the barley do? Not too much. He was a smart fellow. He went ahead and he grabbed onto the goats. So, he's holding onto the goats now for dear life. And now he comes to Bezen, holding onto the goats, and he said to the owner of the goats, he said, by the way, your goats ate $500 worth of barley. He was towing a very, very high number. Now, the Ma'azik, the owner of the goats, I don't think that's true. So that sounds an exorbitant amount of money. A goat, a little goat, a boy, it does look that right. So he's saying, no, not true. They didn't need so much. So now you have a din Torah between the Nizik is claiming a tremendous amount of money, and the Mazik is saying, no, I owe you much, much less. Who would win this din Torah? So either this is depending on whether it's a kofar kol, whether it's mixed or something, but the chora, the owner of the goat is not going to have to pay that much money. He's not going to have to, because the chora, we can't prove how much the barley was really worth. So Amar Budishmul, so Budishmul comes and throws a monkey wrench into the sugya. Yochal liton ad kedei demayen, the ibay omar lekuchos hein biyadi. Comes the Abu Dishmul and he says, the person who was tayface the goat, the owner of the barley, was very, very smart, whether he should have done it or not, in terms of Yosher, it's a different story. But once he grabbed those goats, he had an unbelievable upper hand against the mazik, against the real owner of the goats. Why? Because he could have easily walked into Bezin and said, these are my goats. Halach is, if I walk into Bezin and I'm wearing a shirt, that's my shirt. I'll walk into Bezin and I'm holding a wallet in my pocket. That's my wallet. Whatever I'm muxik on, the possession is 9.999 tenths of the law. So the starting point would be, if the Baal HaKush, the person whose barley had eaten, would have simply wanted to say, these goats are mine, and that I'm taking them, I'm walking away with them, taking them home and shechting them, he would have had every right to do so. But he doesn't say that. What does he say? He walks in the basement and he says, these are not my goats. I'm made that they're not my goats. But, by the way, I have a claim of $500 against you because your goats ate my chushli. And the other guy says, it's not true. They never ate the chushli, etc. He comes to the Buddha Shmuel and says, the owner of the barley has a big goat. Believe me how much barley they ate. Even though normally I wouldn't be believed. What's the of Raya? Believe me how much barley they ate. Migo, I could have said, the goats belong to me all along, and I'm going to walk away with the goats themselves. That's the Migo of the Buddha Shmuel.
Who brought the din Torah?
Who's back? The person whose barley was eaten. So right. He's coming.
If the person whose barley was eaten brought the din Torah, then the owner of the taker of the goats can't turn around.
That's him, the same person. The person whose barley was
eaten. Then if the person, the toin can't become the nitan in the middle of the case.
Well,
that's what you're suggesting by virtue of the fact that he can say, they're my goats, right?
Well, it's not really tying anything. I'm advancing one time. My time is I won $500 for my bar that was eaten. So the Bezin listens and says, sorry, but I'm not giving you a penny because the most of the Raya. The guy says, okay, fine. So, but if I would have said the goats are mine, I would have been believed. So comes
the goats were yours. Why did you bring the din Torah? You're the one that brought the din Torah.
Yeah, because I'm the owner.
If I've got two goats here, they're my goats. What do I want from you?
No, I'm not really claiming the goat. I'm a good, honest guy. I figured out that you ate your goats ate $500 worth of my farm. That's my starting point. I want my money honestly. I'm not trying to pull anything over anybody. I come and I say, you own the goats, owe me $500. The owner of the goats says, well, I'm not paying you $500. So comes the owner of the barley and says, well, Bezin, believe me in what I'm saying, even though my claim per se is not believable, believe me what I'm saying, because I could have just as easily claimed that the goats are mine. And if I would have claimed the goats are mine, I would have had the goats. So comes the wood, the Shmuel, and says, well, how much do the goats cost? So if the goats cost $500, that's great. If the goats cost $20, then you don't have amigo anymore. You only have amigo ad kedei demayen, up to what the value of the goats is. So if the goats are worth more than your claim, or the same as your claim, so then you have a claim, you have a migo that's worth $500. If the goats are not worth that much, then your migo is worthless. So that was the Buddhist most famous stuff.
I think
the most
superpowers of all time.
Oh, hey, wait a second. You are right.
He's undercutting his own.
Wait. Yeah, hold on. You're 10 steps ahead. Okay, let's just appreciate this. This is the migo. So again, Buddhist Shmuel's looking at the goats. He's looking at the barley. He's looking everybody in the face and he's saying, you, Mr. Barley owner, your time is a terrible time. You want $500 of barley like me. Hey, take it. What's the color of a riot? But you do have in your back pocket a valetider. And the valetider would have been, to claim the ism of mine, Migo, you could have claimed they're yours and benefited up to $500 worth because that's what the ism are worth. They never not today. That was a Buddha Shmuel's breakthrough. When you learn a thing like this, you have to think of Chaim Ben Lozhin in Nefesh HaChayim. So he has a whole piece he discusses about when a person learns Torah. So Kol's mind is the learning Torah itself. They shouldn't focus on like El Masal Yoinim and you know and that. That should be when you're davening, you should focus on Avinu Avraham, the same as the Ben. You should ask the Rebbeinu Shlom to understand the greatness and Torah and appreciate you making an impact on your neshava. And when you say Birchas Torah in the morning, and when you say Yiratzo to Tefillah from Chulim Minakana, and every once in a while in the middle of learning, you want to close your Gemara for a minute and just get back into the slavos, the excitement, the gishmak of learning. But when you're learning the sugya itself, Rav Chaim Volozhin says, to learn the sugya. He says, don't get involved in, you know, up in the air, just learn the sugya and understand the kashas and the terutzim and the Gemara, Rashi, understand the details of the sugya. And he gives us an example. He says, because if you're going to tell me, he says, some people mistakenly think that when you're learning, you have to always be at this high and this spiritual, and you got to be like the, thinking of the wows and the weeds and all that kind of stuff. He says, it's clearly not the case, he says. And his right is from the sugya of Migo. He says, that's one of his right. He says, imagine a person is learning the intricacies of Hilchos Migo. I tiny, you owe me $500, and you owe me this, and he tiny to go take this. And I said, you're going to tell me a person at the same time that he's trying to figure out the gives and takes of Hilchos Migo, he says it's efshar to be thinking about the malachim and the shrofim. It can't be. It's two different worlds. He says the terrace is you have to think about the halakha stuff first, and then when you look at this, you get into the trenches and just figure out who's right. This guy's Migo right, that guy's Migo, the other guy's Migo. This is an example of something that's impossible to be. You know, we at the time of the we are to the weeds, now we're back to the sugya. So comes, I see we already have a few people who are jumping on this Migo and saying, wait a second. This Migo smacks of a Migo de Ha'aza. And I'll tell you what Migo de Ha'aza is, a very simple, straightforward Migo de Ha'aza. The owner of the barley has two claims to put forth. He can either put forth the claim how much the barley was worth, or he can put forth the claim that the kuchim biyadi, that I am the real owner, I bought these either from you last month. When he puts forth the claim of how much the barley is worth, that's not a ha'aza claim. That's not a mechutzav claim, because the other guy has no idea that it wasn't there. So, it may be true, may not be true, but it's not chutzav. You need to look you straight in the face and say, these goats, they're my goats. You have goats. I raised these goats. I never sold these goats. My favorite goats, my family goats. I never gave these goats. That's an unbelievable ha'aza to say the kuchim biyadi. So come to Rishon and say, wait a second. We have a klal gadol. The Rosh developed us a klal yisayin and halacha that migad ha'azol le'amrinan. That's the reason why every shomer doesn't get off, because it's a migad ha'azol. And that's the reason why every major mikzah doesn't get off without being nishma, because it's a migad ha'azol. Correct the Rishonim. This is also a migad ha'azol. So what was Avod Shmuel saying? How could Avod Shmuel accept this migo? Tepuk lay that it's a migad ha'azol. You want to be believed with time A, that this is the amount that the goat ate. The Migo of Taina B is a tremendous chutzpah to say, L'kucha miyadi, halal maka b'shikla, the other guy knows you're lying through your teeth. So that's not a valid Migo. That's the cash that all the Rishonim bother. That's pretty much, I think, that question's been floating around here. So come to Rishonim and say, Yisod, that Migo da Oza sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work. What does that mean? Listen to this one. Come to Rishonim and say, Migo da Oza lift or Mimamon Amrinan, Migo da Oza lifta mishvua loy Amrinan. In the case that the Rosh was talking about, the Maid of the Mixus, the Shvus HaShemrim, the Migo was coming to exempt you, to get you off a Shvua. Sorry, Migo da Oza can't do that. In this case, there's no Shvua here. Here is Shvua Dini Mamon. Is he going to pay or not going to pay? Migo da Oza is valid as long as the name of the game is Dini Mamon. That's the Yisod that the Rishonim just showed you from the Gemara. Otherwise, this sugi about the Ezim and the sugi about the Shvuas are contradictory. The problem is that this is Sisrei Torah. This is like up in the air. This is Sisrei Torah. What kind of luck is that? The Marav Shech. Make up your mind. If you think Migo works for Mamonis and for Shvuas like the Rosh does, then why should you arbitrarily differentiate? Well, Migos work for both, but not all Migos. If you believe that Migo the Oza is a deficient Migo, it should be deficient for both. How in the world can you walk this tightrope and say that Migo the Oza kind of is a good Migo, kind of yeah, kind of no. For Mominus, it's okay, and for Shavuos, it's not okay. It's tied to the side. The whole thing is internally contradictory. What is going on? What's the secret behind the Chos Migo? So the answer to this is the Yisod that appears in Rabbi Chanan. Chanan has it explicitly. It was a common refrain in the yeshivas in Europe already 100 years ago. Different Rosh Yeshivas said it in different nuances.
The Rabbi Chanan, he says it very, very clear. A lot of people said it clear, but he says it very, very clear, and some of his presentations become like almost like the gold standard of this presentation. But again, something that was accepted already in many, many different yeshivas, said it in different nuances of ways. Rabbi Chanan develops the following yisod to explain this seeming discrepancy in Hilchos Nigo, why also yes, sometimes no, based on a fundamental yisod. It goes back to the ABCs of Nigo. What is Nigo based on? What is the lumbus? Nigo is one of the deep dark secrets in halacha. What is it based on? How does it work exactly? It says in Bukhanan, you can understand Nigo in one of two ways. Either you can understand Nigo, that Nigo is simply a proof. It's just a simple, straightforward proof. It's a statistical proof. It's a psychological rogue, in fact, that we made a study of people's lying habits, and we came to the realization that if a person wanted to lie, they would most probably, that's the key phrase, they would most probably lie in the easiest, best, convenient, simplest way possible. And the fact that a person knows that they could have theoretically lied and they didn't go down that path, and they're giving us some kind of a strange story that doesn't seem to be true, that based on its own merits wouldn't be true, but we can't look at what they're saying in a vacuum. We have to look at it in the context of they theoretically could have said something else that would have easily gotten them off the hook, and they didn't go down that path, that gufa is some kind of indication of the telling the truth. So, you know, we have a lot of different roles in halacha. We have biological roles, we have sociological roles, this is the psychological role. You know, we assess people's truthful and lying habits, and we realize that 85% of people, if they wanted to lie, would lie in a cleaner, glatter, you know, less convoluted way. But the fact that the person could have lied and didn't, he most probably is really telling the truth. It's a role, it's a proof. The Migo is a kind of a bureau, kind of a proof to enable us out of Paschim this entire properly. That's one way of understanding what a Migo is. But maybe no. Maybe Migo is a different form. Maybe Migo is more halakhic in nature rather than statistical and psychological nature. And here it gets a little bit tricky because he had different rishis use different terms. But one of the terms that we use is, it's called as chus hatayna or koh hatayna. Some yeshivas use the phrase namanas baldim b'tayna. So as long as that's the word tayna in there, you're okay. So basically what it means is as follows. That when it comes to the Dina Torah all boils down to tainus. It's basically my claim against your claim. I present my side of the story, you present your side of the story, so the Beis Din has to sit around and listen who has the better claim, who has the better tainus. When we listen to tainus, what gives a person the kach ha-taina, taina is not just the words that actually come out of your mouth and Beis Din. Taina, your entire portfolio, whatever you could have said also, even though Tachlis the Maisa, for whatever reason, you didn't present this, but you could have presented this. You had the koyach to present this. You had the schus to present this. When you come into Beis Din is less interested in listening to every single piece of information. But very often, people present their case, and they leave out some of the important pieces. But just because you personally didn't say it doesn't mean you don't have that koyach, that authority. So when we look at a Din Torah, we don't only look at the words that are coming out of the person's mouth. We are looking at the entire picture as well. Not because that's necessarily indicative psychologically, statistically, that he's more or less telling the truth, but that's just part of Dinei Torah. That's part of the koach of Baldovar, Baldin. Baldin expresses whatever he can express literally, and even those things that he didn't, are even he expressed it in a sense.
So it's not a matter of
gold. Okay, hold on. So we're going to see how these two reasons potentially play out in these vehicles. And that's exactly the direction we're going. It says in B'chanan, any and every time that you look at Migos, you have to ask yourself, do you have these two parts, these two components? But the emphasis is, B'chanan, you don't really need both components. Either one is good. Migo can work not for one way or the other. Either one is a valid approach in halacha. Either it's Victorious Birur or it's Victorious Chus HaTayna. That's what B'chanan says. Wherein lies the deficiency of a Migo Ta'aza? Why is Migo Ta'aza no good? The answer is very simple. A Migo Ta'aza is a deficiency in proof. Because the whole statistic, the whole psychological truth is that he's probably telling the truth because what was the key phrase? Because he could have just as easily told a lie. The minute that we remove that phrase from the discussion, it's not just as easily. Because if he would have lied, he would have been a mechutzav to lie, and the other guy would start screaming and machi b'shiko, the other guy would realize he's lying. Once you have a Migo Ta'aza, so it's always biru. The statistics are over. The psychological proof is gone. It's history. That's the deficiency of a Migo Ta'aza. However, even though it's no longer a biru, what is it? It's still a chus hatayna. I could have said it. whether I was comfortable saying it, whether it would have been nice for me to say it, whether it would have been smiling saying it, but self, I could have said it. Anything that I could have said, whether I would have wanted to or not, if I could have said it, the difference between what I could have said and what I would have said. If I could have said it, that's called this Kalecha Taina, that's called this Kalecha Taina. I still have that in my back pocket. That's still in my portfolio of Taina. Comes with a Chon and says, Amiga da Aza is no good, but not entirely no good. Amiga da Aza is a chisarn in the Bir Shabo, but it's not a chisarn in the Kalecha Taina Shabo. That's Yisod number one, Yisod number two. In order to pata shvua, so the Rima Gash holds, Amigo doesn't even pata shvua, but we disagree. Rosh Moshe Sharon holds, Amigo pata bishvua. How can Amigo pata bishvua? The Torah says you need a birur shvua. How could you have Amigo in its place? The answer is, whenever you have a dintur that requires a shvua, you require a birur. What the halacha says is, you could substitute a birur of Amigo for a birur of shvua. That's the sort of Migo lift of Mishvur. The Rosh and the other Mishnah will disagree with the Rimagash who say, Migo patas Mishvur. What that means is, a Migo is just as good a Birur. It's a sufficient enough Birur that it can accomplish the level of Birur that's necessary. Amed Devar Mamurim, a Migo can accomplish a Birur lift of Mishvur. That's if Migo was wearing the hat of a Birur. If it's not a Migo de Ha'aza, so then it's a Birur of Migo. It's a Migo Birur. It's a Migo of Birur. As a migo birur, it can pass a shvua. But if it's a migo da aza, a migo da aza is not going to pass a shvua, because the only kind of a migo that can pass it from shvua is a migo of birur. Once it's a ha'aza, it's a birur. Ha'aza is a deficiency. Ha'aza is a chisaron in the birur shabel. Since the birur is not sufficient, migo da ha'aza lift of shvua won't work. But one of them is not a dintar of shvua, it's a dintar of mamon. When it comes to Mammon, I don't need a Birur to the degree of Shvua. When it comes to Mammon, all I need is, do I have the upper hand of Tainus? So the answer is, if you have a Migo, whether it's Ha'oz or not Ha'oz, you have the upper hand of Tainus. And it's going to work. So the Chorin says, this razzle-dazzle halach, that basically, the Tamsa Dvarim is, there are two different paths of Migo. Migo can either work through the principle of Birur, or it can work through the principle of Skos HaTainus. Migo da Aza, by definition, can't work both ways. Migo da Aza, by definition, can only work through Schus HaTaina. Schus HaTaina is sufficient for Dina Mamanis, not sufficient for Dina Shvuas. When all the dust settles, says Rabbi Chanan, the easy Yach Lechushla, the Migo is great, it's wonderful. Aita HaAza, who cares? It's coming with the Mammon. As long as we're only talking about Mammon, even a Migo da Aza is good. In the case of Shvuas, of the Rosh, by the Mikzas, and Shvuas HaShomrim, there it's coming with the Mishvuas. Lift of Mishvua, Migo da Aza fails miserably. Now comes the Ketzos and says, now our question is a bomb question. Once we have a case where there are Aden supposedly around, we change the name of the game now. It's no longer Dintar about Shmuas. It's a Dintar about Mammon. Let's bring Migo back to the table. It's a Migo da Aza. Who cares? It's a Migo da Aza. It's like Mavasa the Ezen. That was the Ketzos' Gashas. It was 40 minutes just to appreciate Ketzos' Kasha. So why is it? Why does the Gemara say, in Tarfit the Rekhid, you have to bring Edim and nothing short? What happened to Migo? Once it's Vina Mominus, so then Migo should come back to life again. It should come back to life for Fiyah Rimagash for sure, because Migo lifted Mishvua Amrina, no Amrina, but Migo lifted Mimamun Amrinan. And according to the Rosh, it should come back to life, because the whole reason why we disqualified it in the first place was because it was a Migo da'aza. Once it's a case of Dini Mamanis, Amiga da Aza is acceptable, like in Mavas and Lamevav, till Hadar Krishna will be here. So that was the Ketzos' Kasha. So we have a whole Shabbos on the Sunday, and the Monday, the theme of what the answer is. Hopefully, it's on Tuesday, we'll give about a 2-minute answer to what the Fiyani is 91 could possibly use to add Ketzos' one Mahalach. We'll try to explain a little bit different Mahalach, what the answer to that 11 is, and then I think we can see him on the Sugya and try to move on to the next thing. So we have a couple of days just to digest a little bit this Shtekotar from Rabbi Chanan with the different dimensions of the Ketzos'.